very minor amendment, I think, with respect to perjury and related criteria.
Well, this is proposed amendment number two, it appears. It's under your first red tab of the book. This was drafted by Roger as a result of discussion at the last commission meeting. Perjury article. So I'll let Roger go ahead and explain this amendment.
Well, the commission decided in our last meeting that they would like to consider a contraction statute area of perjury. And we presented one to the commission at our last meeting, which had no particular safeguards. We were just providing the defense of perjury if the person retracted. And they felt that was overly broad. And so this is the second time around we used a contraction statute. It's got a number of safeguards that we did not have. And it reads, it is a defense to a prosecution for perjury or false swearing committed in an official proceeding that the defendant retracted his false statement, A, in a manner showing a complete voluntary retraction of the prior false statement, and B, during the course of the same official proceeding in which it was made, and C, before the subject matter of the official proceeding is submitted to the trier of fact. Substitute is the same definition we had in the prior section of what's an official proceeding. Now the language in A, in a manner showing a complete voluntary retraction of prior false statement. Now that language is in some of our earlier drafts on renunciation. And it's had under the justification of have renunciation under in court time.
So that's not in court time.
Would this be section 6, Roger, of perjury and false swearing?
I think that's probably where it would be placed, although it could be placed anywhere in the article. But I think the last time around it was section 6.
The minutes of the last meeting speak to this. Start on page 5, number 7. Why is that? We still haven't covered this ground.
Well, we're trying to try and avoid that language because it's too complex. Where those issues, those become grave, would be too difficult to prove.
Now, that's discussed on page 8 of your minutes. Now, read to the chairman. The chair called attention to the difficulties explained earlier by Mr. Wallinger, which existed with the use of the phrase before he was manifest. That it did not state explicitly when the retraction affected the outcome of the proceeding, or at what stage it became apparent that the falsification was about to be exposed. Judge Burns agreed with the chairman's reservations concerning the Model 2 improvement. The burden was placed on the prosecution to prove that the retraction was made after it became manifest that the falsification would be exposed. This was an extremely difficult fact to establish. Furthermore, he said, the burden was placed on the defendant is equally difficult for him to prove when it became manifest to the defendant that the falsification was about to be exposed. Molly suggests the problem might be solved by saying that the retraction would be made before a decision had been made by either the court or a jury on a question of fact or with the testimony of the material. Others agree that language of this effect was the intent of the commission. They were going to further explain that if a man committed perjury and polluted the initial process, and for example, an administrative hearing so that a decision was reached in his favor, he would not be able to evade a perjury charge by retracting his testimony in a later stage of the proceeding. After further discussion, the commission agreed to adopt Mr. Spalding's suggestion requiring that retraction be made before the question is submitted to the trier of fact. And further, the contractual section be recorded for redrafting.
Covered by subsection 3C. Before the qualification is disclosed?
I'm a little bit concerned about Casey's desire to climb through the teeth, catching red-handed and cross-examination. As I retract, there's no part I'm seeing or AB and C. I'll put it.
Well, you might have a question under A, whether it was
see why not? It's voluntary. On a point peripheral to that, I don't want to wait at that point, but as I recall the discussion before, I was using the word efficient proceeding. And if I look at this, the guy perjures himself and preliminary hearing, and then also the grand jury, and maybe on a motion to suppress, and then finally before the trial, it's the issue is submitted to the jury to retract, would be hopefully definitely.
Right.
I think that we're losing sight of the purpose of this. Before the defendant is convicted or let loose, that the truth is available to either the judge or the jury before a decision is made. Of fact or the better memory after 6 months or something else, but just plain out and out lying.
Suppose he lies at the preliminary hearing and then comes clean at the grand jury, and the grand jury not truthful.
Argument start really is about the time where any time up to that process. And I realize that it's considerably broad, it's awfully broad, but at the same time, I think the basic principle we're arriving at is to let that trier of fact, whoever he or they may be, have the truth regardless of what's known before.
No. Supposing commits perjury before a hearing.
Well, isn't the magistrate and the preliminary hearing that we really have to determine
judgment, and that sanction wasn't there in evidence, but they believe.
He makes a determination that a crime has been committed.
Well, then I guess that would be a trial of fact. I don't know. Of course, under the present circumstances, we never have it. All really, what we've got to do now is to say, you said one thing here, and you said another thing in a different procedure, so one of the times you must have been lying, so.
A lie in a preliminary hearing that's retracted before the grand jury or at a later trial will not be a retraction in the same procedure. What I believe in the second.
Looking at sub B, is that right?
Yeah. It wouldn't be the same official proceeding under the definition of official proceeding set out in sub 2.
It would?
No, I don't think it would.
Yeah.
In other words, if he lied in the preliminary hearing in order to be able to advance
in the
corner
in the
preliminary
hearing.
That's what I think. Of course, I suppose reading it, as long as you've got a segmented process, what you're aiming at is you want to encourage the truth by giving a bonus to that seems to lie. And in any stage of it, that he pollutes by false testimony and doesn't. But clean up. If the failure of the system will not be punished, I suppose that's the rationale.
Except that the argument that we have to be punished is prevented by the witness making a statement, a false statement, a lie, and then having to stick with that lie all the way through to the jury. And so if it wouldn't make any good to be tracked at the trial, then he wedded to that lie, he would stick to that lie clear through the trial to the jury. So
that's
the
truth. That's the truth.
Oh, I don't know.
If you had a guy who lied to the preliminary hearing,
latitude to go to the factual statute, to do
run into the situation of a guy who was better at fire and lies in the preliminary hearing in an effort to get his study off, or in the grand jury, and if he does succeed in being him off at that point, and he gets not to, the defendant is home free. And the liar or false lawyer can say, well, try to get him off the preliminary hearing at the grand jury, but my God, if they don't buy my story, I'm going to save myself by retracting it before it finally goes to the jury. During the same official proceeding. Well, if the record is clear, that's what we need.
Well, on the bottom of page 4, in my commentary, we indicate that he would still have a retraction.
That's fine.
It is intended that statements made in separate hearings at separate stages of the same proceeding should be deemed to have been made in the course of the same proceeding until such time as the issue is framed by the proceedings has been submitted to the trier of fact.
The problem with that is that that's that in the sense that you say that the magistrate is a trier of fact, it is inconsistent. It doesn't make any difference to me, but it seems to me we ought to make it clear that if we intend your result, I think this language does, because somebody's going to come along and say, well, that magistrate is, in fact, a trier of fact.
Well, I understand it as reading the discussion of the subcommittee in the last time, the commentary. The case of the state versus Burns is the proceeding, and it doesn't make any difference whether we're talking about the preliminary hearing, the grand jury, or a series of depositions which may or may not be taken, but just so long that prior to the time both sides have rested this guy and the final arguments begin, this guy stands up without being trapped into it and says, well, I lied back there. The guy really was there and he did pull the trigger.
I think you can achieve that better if you say ultimate trial. Because where you have a proceeding which goes through several stages, as an ultimate trier, usually the jury, but it might be different in certain types of administrative proceedings. If you want to achieve that, then I think you should say ultimate trier.
Now, what would that do to the hearing officer situation? Would that mean the circuit court?
Well, that's a kind of an anomaly, that particular one, because
there's an appeal to the hearing officer, and then it's the court.
Well, that's an appeal to be novo.
But typically you will not have testimony in the
circuit court.
In the circuit court.
You'll appeal on the record.
The only testimony you can hear in the circuit court is medical evidence, which is not available in the hearing. So typically you won't have evidence there. You could have affidavits and so on, but usually you will not. But if you say ultimate trier of fact, then you achieve the result.
They have an advantage
and the definition of the thing.
Yeah.
So long as the proceeding
traction statute. We originally had
overall gets the truth for its final factual decisional stage, then that means.
Well, the thing I'm bothered about this thing is we split the thing down and call one proceeding the preliminary hearing, another proceeding grand jury, another one, and so forth, motion express, and so forth, is that you're gonna trap a guy even more firmly than he's trapped now in fear of prosecution for perjury. Some statement that he may think was inconsequential or relatively so at the preliminary hearing stage suddenly becomes the key to the case in the trial and circuit court, and you've got no way to even semi-gracefully get out from underneath his name, and he's got to stick with it and hope he doesn't get convicted of perjury. Our prosecutor in our county recently indicted a guy for perjury who was a defendant in a criminal trial and was then found guilty by a jury. The guy was gone to prison for 2 years or whatever it was already, and then the prosecutor wound up looking another 2 or 3 or 4 years for perjuring himself. Well, I think it's within certain limitations, and in spite of the oath, it's a defendant's right to tell whatever story he can tell to get himself out.
There's a limitation.
No. Well, I hear him do it all the time. I just assumed it was accepted.
That's the difference between testimony and closing argument.
Oh,
why we would want to take away a piece from the state. Even though it agreed to be
but the burden on the state, I still think it seems to me we're creating some risk of perjury is always been regarded as a pretty serious thing. I go into a civil trial, I'll lie through my teeth if they happen to nail me. Cover myself and recover the damage. Take that cast of characters that we have in the capital of everyone.
What if simplifying is very common in
I'm sure it's that bunch of guys that is sufficiently sculpted.
What if it comes clean and then
once you
expose them, they
claim it as clean.
Right.
Well, it seems to me that it's important to give, if you're going to go on that premise at all, it's important to give a person a retraction defense when he knows he's not going to be exposed.
Well, that's right. But in this case, the guy who is caught in a bald-faced lie, right in the middle of the courtroom, isn't saying, "Well, I
not really. I'm well." I read A as keeping the guy pretty well eliminating the defense of the guy who's caught in the ball face lie.
Well, I don't tell. It's perfectly voluntary. I don't see that at all.
Well, I don't think it's voluntary.
Voluntary is defined in law as acting or done without compulsion or persuasion.
About the time the prosecutor turns around and says, "I'd like to have transcript of the preliminary hearing and start looking through this thing," I would think the voluntary part pretty well disappears by that stage.
Wouldn't the voluntariness of the retraction be an issue for the jury?
Yeah.
I mean, I could take care of the jury.
It depends on what you define the word voluntary. I don't think that would be voluntary. Well, to move along on this, I should say first, in reviewing the schedule of where we are in regards to the substance of the meeting, Don said last night that he thought it might be possible for us to complete and have a commission all the substance for 4 more meetings after this 2 days. That would include the articles that the substance would have to get approved that we can go for any other month. And I hope we can. Now, let me suggest this. If, now I'm not really addressing myself to the Attorney General's suggestion with respect to manifesting a falsification. However, if you want to make that informed motion, you can. But as to Judge Burns' suggestion that we use ultimate prior fact, and if that's what we really mean, and I don't care because I'm not around. If you look at page 7 in the text of the Michigan Revised Criminal Code, there's the second sentence, section 4930, the statements made in separate hearings at separate stages of the same trial or administrative proceeding shall be deemed to have been made in the course of the same proceeding. Now, if this is what we really mean, it seems to me that simplified is for participants in process later. If we just add that language to efficient proceedings, sub 2, the section. I just suggest that, okay, that would be about focusing on the three.
Second.
Restate your motion.
I move with the adopt proposal amendment number 2.
As is. All right. There's a motion that we adopt the proposal amendment number 2. Any discussion? All right. Those in favor of the motion, say aye. Say aye. Nay. All opposed. Yes, please.
Aye. Chandler.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Ernstead.
Aye.
Johnson.
No.
Nye.
No.
Spaulding.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
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 Did you vote no?
I beat it to it.
Motion carried. Now,
can I ask you a Representative Frost question? Now, in your motion, was your understanding that our definition of official proceeding was clear enough that insofar as separate stages of the same proceeding? You want the commentary to remain the way it is?
My intended discussion was that it fairly much completed the various stages of the proceeding for themselves separate proceedings.
Yeah, okay. Now that's a separate proceeding.
That's completely in variance with the commentary and the discussion behind it. But it is a variance of the commentary.
Well, now you voted for the motion.
If I may. Ask Mr. Frost to read page 4 of the commentary at the bottom paragraph, sub 2, run your railroad road. Refreshments made during the course of the same official proceeding. It is intended the statements made in separate hearings at separate stages of the same proceeding shall be deemed to have been made in the course of the same proceeding until such time that the issues framed by the proceedings have been submitted to the trier of fact.
Well, now that's the reason I asked the question, because I don't think that's what the section says. Our definition of official proceeding.
I don't think that's either. Yeah.
Right, that's what I thought. And so we ought to change the commentary to conform if that was the intent of the motion.
That wasn't the intent of the second.
You like a motion for reconsideration?
Representative Frost, having voted on the prevailing side, means that we reconsider the action by which we just passed his motion. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The chair will rule that the ayes have. The proposed amendment number 2 is back for the
Chairman,
that's you. All right.
Oh, yeah. I move that we. That we
commentary, concentrate five, and insert the word ultimate between the word the and prior, with the understanding that that motion is intended to incorporate the thinking that has been discussed here, namely that the retraction at any stage is sufficient where proceedings have several stages.
Well, can I ask you before I put your motion, would you not achieve the same objective in a more definitive manner if you would still insert ultimate in sub 3 and sub C?
I'll move to put in both places. We'll make a question.
Second. Okay. There's the motion made and seconded that we amend sub C by inserting the word ultimate between the words E and fire, and that we similarly in the commentary on page 5 discussion.
Can I ask the first question back to the motion now? It would seem to me that this really goes to the definition of official proceeding. And if that's the intent of the commission, I would really ask if we shouldn't include another sentence in our after our definition of official proceeding, similar to the commission text, which says statements made in separate proceedings, separate stages, etc., shall be deemed as been made in the course of the same proceeding. If that's what you want, then
it makes a lot more sense. Do you want to add that?
Yes, I would add that.
If I'd suggest you would really consider it instead of the
question. Okay. You offer the motion to amend the check 3 parts. So all in favor say aye.
Mr. Burns?
Aye.
Carson?
No.
Mr. Chandler?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Hawes?
Aye.
Brinskin?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
No.
Spalding?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Okay. The motion is carried to the end.
I'll move we add a subsection. Subsection C. Page 14 manifest the qualification.
Where will that go?
That would be subsection C, and then we'll make this make B for the
really defined voluntary. Say that the actual voluntary.
Well, I
say now, we need to really separate.
I just don't.
Johnson has moved that we insert an additional subsection with the number C and then we renumber the parentheses, and that this would read, it's actually the same language as the long field code, but you recite the language.
Yeah. Let me change the phone.
All right.
I would delete the language in subsection A and replace it with the following, substitute the following language. Before it became manifest that the falsification was or would be exposed.
All right. You've heard the motion. Is there further discussion? If not, for those in favor, who will signify if I say aye, you will call those opposed.
Carson?
Aye.
Chandler?
No.
Ross?
No.
Aye. Thursday?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Spalding?
No.
Mr.
Chairman?
Aye.
Are there further
motions?
I'll ask
you one day.
All right, Judge Berg, please, will be approved both segments. This is a question going to the bond attorney. Well, what I'm saying is, all I'm saying is, in the commentary, the question is whether the qualification was exposed or not to be exposed.
Now, this
There's so many places that all the questions exposure about it.
Yes. Exposure just from the guy at home stand. Now you say such and such.
Is it, for example, when
or is it when his lawyer finds out the police have statements? Or is it when he sees two guys that he thought were in Acapulco, Mexico, walk into the front room and...
Well, I think it's a question of fact that each proceeding is difficult. It's a question of fact, but I think there is a point, quite obvious in some cases. I think that you can get a cast of character from Portland. You just take the attitude, look, I'll carry this lie as far as I can go. If they nail me, I'm going to retract. I don't think that's particularly good in it. But
I agree with you. I think the idea we're at.
Mr. Chairman, now, in our In Court Crimes article, it's on the agenda for tomorrow. We have several sections there, three separate sections, I believe, which allow the defense of renunciation. And we use the same language with respect to renunciation there. For example, under attempt at renunciation, we allow it under circumstances manifesting a voluntary and complete renunciation of his criminal intent. Now, the commentary to that section says, to qualify for the defense of renunciation, however, the section requires that the renunciation must be completely voluntary. It is not sufficient if the actor is frightened into abandoning his conduct because of the imminence of police interference, or because he decides to wait until a later time to continue his activity, or because the means he has chosen for accomplishing the crime has proved inadequate. Now, what would you think, Lee, to the commentary along those same lines? In effect, kind of giving an example of the type of voluntariness
that's
we're thinking about.
To get into the comment division. In other words, the fact that, and I really rely on Jim's remarks, and Jim's earlier remarks, in fact, he voted against it. You were, in effect, saying this is a question, goes to voluntariness. I'm not quite sure if I'm convinced of that, but well, I'd like to have something to commentary. In the case where the guy's been caught red-handed, but it's no longer a voluntary retraction.
That last simple statement I'll buy.
Yeah, because as I understand it, we call this a defense, which means the defendant has the burden of bringing them into the case, and then once it's in, the state has the burden of overcoming it.
Yeah.
Traditionally, with our defense.
You're making that in the form of a motion.
Right.
And we're going to be like Wally Carson Dow. We're only going to deal in policy, not detail. But as I understand, the sense of your motion is to incorporate language similar to what Don just recited from the court crime section.
Well, let me state the motion to you. Language in the commentaries indicates that evidence of exposure is relevant to determining the question of voluntary.
All right, that's pretty
good. Or the imminence.
Yeah.
But it is not sufficient if the actor is frightened into retracting because of the imminence of exposure of the truth. Or exposure to false.
So moved, I can't
say it.
Well, I think going off pretty well. I know every frequent
don't be relevant. It's some evidence. I read it in the motion. I won't restate the motion at all in the name of the
All right.
opposed, no. Motion is carried. Are we ready for the question on the...
There's a simple comment. Taken away, the likelihood of the effect actually coming out of the speed of the entire effect. We should be sitting down and sit out all of the evidence that goes towards the lack of voluntariness or possibility of exposure. And try to explain this to the committee and say, comment.
Okay.
Purpose of the proceeding, the purpose of the action is different too. On the matter then before the court, during the time the court has been acting, so we hear. And now I think we've sort of overburdened this basic concept of not liking it.
Are we going to, Chairman, want to change the oath so now says,
New language as far as statutes are concerned.
phrase happen, but we have under our justifiable or under reasonable homicide, on page 11 of the draft, you can see the commentary sets out this relationship of that subsection to existing law. As noted in the Model Penal Code, the law universally allows the privilege of the exercise of domestic authority. Under our excusable homicide statute, we have now 163.110. This is one of the excuses that's available for the killing of a human being with respect to correcting a child or a servant. We don't have a statute that deals specifically with the use of physical force against a minor or incompetent person by a teacher, but seeing the same considerations, feeling suddenly the same considerations should apply. Now, only make it clear that we're not talking about deadly physical force, we're talking about reasonable physical force.
Don, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
The statute reasonably believes it necessary to use it. Is that an objective standard or objective?
Well, his belief has to be that of me. That's the general theory that runs through this whole area.
Well, that's the way I tend to interpret it, but I'm just a little bit worried about his words.
Well, that's it's his belief, but it has to be a reasonable one.
Yeah,
well, it's just the way that he's worried a little bit. That's the way I interpret it.
Now, like you were just talking about, you said it has to be reasonable physical force, but is there anywhere we don't define physical force anywhere? Being the force reasonable under these circumstances?
No. We don't define reasonable physical force. We, in our general definitions, define physical force and deadly physical force, what we mean by those terms. We have not attempted to define reasonable.
Well, how do you define physical
force? Now, our general definitions that have been approved by the Commission subsection 5 of section 3 of our general or our preliminary article. Deadly physical force means physical force that under the circumstances in which it is used is readily capable of causing death or serious physical injury. That's deadly physical force. And we've discussed.
We have deadly force there,
right? Yeah, it's in there. I'll take it back what I said about physical force. We do not define physical force because it was felt at the time that anything that did not fall within deadly physical force would be covered.
Yeah, we don't. You've got a situation where they use the physical. But you don't say that the physical force has to be reasonable. I mean, as long as it doesn't come to the point of being deadly physical force, not like as far as somebody that wants to come on to some other that you wouldn't even spank a 2-month-old. You're just using physical force, but yet because of the age of the child, the condition, the physical force would not be the excessive.
Yeah, it could. I mean, it wouldn't be reasonable
under 2 months. Wouldn't be reasonable.
Well, it's
the same with a 2-month-old age.
I'm sure you agree that would be reasonable.
Well, under the present situation, no, it would be perfectly all right because because the person has to use the usual and ordinary caution. At least that's the way our just an assault battery case on a child that instructs that the discipline has to be done with usual and ordinary cautiousness in case language on it. But here, as long as the person believes it's reasonably necessary to maintain discipline, he can use any amount of force that he wants to, as long as it doesn't come to the point of death.
So they use reasonable force.
That's because it's not here. My draft doesn't have it in there. That's why it's not there.
That's like Judge Julius Hoffman telling one of the witnesses that things that we recognize language in the U.S. District Court has been sent by a transcript.
And it should make it clear that we're referring to the stuff in the black folder, not the blue folder.
No, I tell you, the blue folder that I had, you see, it's a preliminary draft. That was one of the drafts.
Now, that's the one that's black.
You know the numbers, that's the problem.
Your question is resolved.
Well, I'll read it now.
Well, is there any further? Commentary or the minutes of August 15th where the subject is contributed, I think made it quite clear that deadly physical force would not be committed. Now, what I think they'll do is rather than adopt subsection by subsection, go subsection by subsection and come back and get together on the whole section. So if there isn't any further discussion with regard to sub 1,
what?
Section 4. Let's look at sub 2.
Page 9.
Black book. Friday's agenda. an authorized official of a jail, prison, or correctional institution may, in order to maintain order and discipline, use such physical force as is authorized by law.
I think we talked in the subcommittee about making the exception that authorized by law. Law is the law. We have what we said. It doesn't seem to me to make things up.
Well, I have that checked on mine. I don't think we've talked about this in the full commission.
No,
last time.
We have in the subcommittee.
We did.
Some details.
Force. For officials already authorized or necessary to say it here. Left by it simply a matter of performance. Responsible for the opinion of some bearing showing that authorized officials should also be discovered. Subcommittee general interest to do. Now that's all the discussion tomorrow.
We were trying to just integrate this justification article with some of the other statutes that we have.
Yeah, I remember now.
Now, for example, ORS 421-105
deals with custody of inmates, penal and correctional institutions. Violence and injury to inmates prohibited. It says the warden may enforce obedience to the rules for the government of the inmates by appropriate punishment, but neither the warden or any other person, prison official or employee may strike or inflict physical violence, except in self-defense, or inflict any cruel or unusual punishment. The person of an inmate sentenced to prison or penitentiary is under the protection of the law, and he shall not be injured except as authorized by law. That's an example of the...
Seems to me it wouldn't hurt anything if you added in that phraseology.
I'm not sure it helped it.
Well,
then we don't at least we aren't dependent upon it.
Well, in other words, it's
a section. After.
Oh, God, yeah. A lot of sections.
This seems to be pretty clear.
The legislature is never going to remove from the ordinance of state penitentiary the ability to create rules and regulations in addition to statutes. So the penitentiary can do none and then order anything.
If you insert your proposed amendment, does it not then fly in the face, so to speak, of the specific statute that Don read that spells out what a warden can do?
Well, suppose you have a specific statute that totally changes the statute. Gives the warden carte blanche authority to regulate the prison. Adopt the regulations as necessary. So the warden adopts the regulations and says, shoot on sight. Any prisoner is in any way infracting the rules of this prison.
Well,
I'm not so sure. The legislature, what I'm getting at is the legislature may adopt. I don't think it's like this in other circumstances. It's adopted. But you may have lost the point of the order. This would be a proposed standard still being on the order.
Well, the thing that this statute says he can enforce the rules by appropriate punishment, whatever that may mean. But he can't inflict physical violence except in self-defense. And he can't inflict cruel or unusual punishment. Now, I don't read that to be a grant of authority to use physical force. I suspect they surely do it. The thing that bothers me a little bit about this is these guys, a number of them out there, they read the statutes a lot more carefully. They're saying you know this commission. Among other things. It's more interest in the outcome too. But I can see astute guy like say Ralph Lynn or somebody like that coming in and suing on the ground that there's no specific authorization in law for anything except self-defense. This is what bothers me about it. I don't want to open up an opportunity to increase the Maybe that's a strange instruction.
But you haven't made a motion yet.
Fine. I will make a motion. Amend subsection 2.
I think the motion may ought to be to use such physical force as may be reasonably necessary or as is authorized by law.
The only point is that in some cases they're justified using deadly force. That's why I was looking for mine in subsection 3.
Yeah, some of that's covered under our.
Yeah, all right. All right.
Okay. Subsection 2, I would move to amend by deleting the words in the second line, starting with the word use, the word force, and substitute the following words. We use physical force only to the extent reasonably reasonable. Necessary to maintain order or discipline.
Restate your voting for a long
time. Strike everything after the word may. Go line 2.
Restate your voting for it.
No.
I think I got a simpler way of saying this.
Let me try my
first. Well, right, what are you going for?
Alright, I would insert the words may use physical force when it would be necessary to maintain order and discipline and is authorized by law.
Alright, now.
I wonder why you frame two and three differently. It seems to me that we should say a person responsible for the maintenance of order and discipline in a jail, prison, or correctional institution, or a person acting under criminal direction. And you can use the same need in the two as you do in the three. And you would then pinpoint responsibility for the exercise of force or the maintenance of order and discipline to the head of the institution. And I wonder if there is a danger willy-nilly authorize anybody in jail, prison, or correctional institution
Well, I think there would be a danger. That's probably use the words authorized official of a jail, prison, or correctional
institution. Well, who's an authorized official? The night watchman that's out front and meets Western.
Who's responsible for the enforcement of order and order?
The guard probably is.
Mildred,
take a deep breath and engage in that
motion. Well, I think it would strike everything else.
Right.
And then say.
I get restated.
May use physical force when and to the extent he reasonably believes. To the extent that he reasonably believes it is necessary to maintain order and discipline and is authorized by law.
Because as he reasonably believes, the modified law.
Yeah,
we've all done it occasionally.
I'm going to vote against Mr. Johnson's motion.
Oh, okay.
All right. I'm going to vote against Mr. Johnson's motion.
Lee's motion of...
Well, you have the same and or.
The only thing is there is I was trying to use the same standard that we're using throughout the statute. The same language. I think we changed the language to reflect the standard. I wouldn't like to insert one word in the motion.
All right.
But reasonable is what they're looking for.
All right.
Does anybody want that's covered? Want us to restate his motion? We all understand.
Did he change it? Right.
No, what I'm using is the same standard that we use throughout this whole world of change. That's fine. Right. I was trying to use the same one as that three as
well. Well, of course, one thing on the battery is that the thrust of two is to maintain order and discipline, whereas three is only to maintain order.
I put in order. I put in and discipline.
But the reason I prefer the Chandler is that
what you want to do is
permit the warden to exercise such degree of physical force as is authorized by law presently or in the future, and also to whatever extent the law may have some gaps in, want to authorize him to use reasonable physical force in order to maintain order and discipline. It seems to me that you best achieve that by using Chandler's. It wouldn't exclude deadly physical force, as I read it, if the circumstances call for deadly.
But it came under a statute that permitted the use of that.
Or even if there's a gap in the statute,
well,
in some guy has.
Reasonably
necessary to keep the guard from being killed, or another prisoner from being killed.
Well, the only thing I raise about it is, it seems to me we ought to keep our language somewhat consistent throughout the section. This is almost the same language you're using in 1 and 3. Right? They use language in 1, which is they use reasonable force when and to the extent he reasonably believes it's necessary to maintain discipline and order.
Well, but they use deadly force only when he reasonably believes it's necessary to prevent death or serious physical injury.
Well, I think there's another section that uses deadly force.
Yeah, there is.
There's another section.
No. This section wasn't intended to include any deadly force provisions, was it?
No, it wasn't. And it wasn't. Now, with respect to this section on prison officials, we didn't use reasonable for the reason that the degree of force and the use of force by prison officials has been controlled under your corrections code by specific statute. And now, if we allow reasonable force, I think we should recognize, particularly if you put it in the disjunctive, reasonable force or as is authorized by law.
Yes.
You're going to be expanding the discretion and the authority of the warden from what it is under a present law. And
no.
If you say it and, then I don't think you're having any effect at all over what you did or.
Yeah.
I don't think you're accomplishing anything if you say and is authorized or wrong, because then you still have to go to the corrections code, which says you can only injure somebody or strike him. And striking an individual could certainly mean the use of physical force. And he's specifically limited under the corrections code to a self-defense situation. He can't use it for disciplinary purposes, the way I read 421.105. Now, if you want to do that, I mean, if you want to go beyond what the corrections code authorizes, then that's fine. But if you don't, I think that...
Well, aren't we just setting something here? This is going to be one of the prison guards is charged with a crime, assault and battery, or aggravated assault, or whatever it might be. He's coming in with business of defense. Although, if the grant just sets up the standard, we follow it. But if this is a little broader than the correction code, he's still got the physical against the correction code. It's the officer.
I think it should be or now.
Well, if you say or, then you definitely
you're
saying expanding.
You're giving him a defense for the crime. You know, he may have violated the corrections code.
You're giving him a defense. Then you can act reasonably.
Well, let's restate the motion.
You want Bob to restate your motion?
Did you want to? All right. May use reasonable physical force when, to the extent he reasonably believes it's necessary to maintain discipline or order, or as he's authorized.
Question number one.
All right.
Bob, we stay
for someone to put on the board.
All right, Bob, restate your...
If this motion is defeated, my motion will read, line 3, such physical force as may reasonably be necessary or as is authorized by law.
All right, you've heard the motion. Everybody in favor of... Lee's motion signify by saying aye when your names are called, those opposed, no.
Fishburne?
Aye.
Carson?
Aye.
Chandler?
Aye.
Frost?
Aye.
Haas?
Aye.
Durnstead?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Spaulding?
No.
Mr. Chairman?
No.
Motion is carried. Now, for the other motions or questions with respect to sub 2, if not, sub 3.
Now, sub 3 would permit people like railroad conductors, bus drivers, other people responsible for maintaining order on common carriers to use reasonable physical force to maintain order. We don't have anything like that in our present law, although there is a statute under ORS 764.160 which says that railroad conductors and engineers are vested with the power of the sheriff.
This is a hijacker law.
No, it's mostly I've got reasonable for physical
force. If you do it all along, you never say reasonable.
Well, they said we're in a black book.
The first one is the black one. But they never say reasonable. They just say physical.
Well, no, just a minute. Now, the reason we didn't say that under 3 is because it goes on to say that he may use deadly physical force only when he reasonably believes it's necessary to prevent death or serious physical injury. So we do give him a further option to use deadly physical force under limited situations.
But what you're saying is that, and it kind of goes through all the rest of the sections here too. And once you say that it's all right, it's reasonable for a person to use force, as long as he doesn't go to the extent of deadly force, it's all right. You don't say where maybe hitting him once would stop it. He can go ahead and hit him many times as he he wants to, once he's allowed to use force, as long as it doesn't come to the point of being deadly, you don't put any breaks or make use of force that's reasonable under the circumstances. Where do you do that?
I disagree with this, because I think that, and this is why I'm a little bit buggy in my own motion, why we put reasonable in front of the word physical force in section 1 and 2. If you say to the extent he reasonably believes, he reasonably modifies to the extent also. And I think it's redundant.
You had a question, Wallace.
Well, my thing is, if there's a difference between reasonable physical force, one reasonably believes necessary, and just plain physical force that one believes necessary.
Well, there must be a difference, because there's got to be a difference, because we define deadly physical force.
All right, let's take deadly out of it. We're just talking about reasonable, or about physical force. We have a definition of reasonable physical force, and we have a definition of physical force.
No, that is reasonable force, but it is reasonably necessary.
That's part of the problem. We don't have any definition of physical force or reasonable.
Yeah, we have a definition of physical.
No, we have a definition of deadly physical force, and physical force is any physical force short of deadly.
And one's reasonable.
Yeah, we're going to, I think, 5-minute recess.
Sit on
it.